Where do I start? I'm looking at our report last year. And I went through a few things. That is, on the 18th of April, when the department presented budget book number 29 and strategic plan, the one that's being revised now. A couple of things came up. One, the department said the national strategic policy will be submitted to cabinet on the 2011-2012 financial year, that is the one on national strategic fuel stock. The same applied to the LPG strategy. But I must say, in terms of the cleaner fuels too, things were done okay in the time from what we got recently. On promotion of clean and renewable energy sources, something was said to the effect that a standard offer policy which provides incentives for intervention that improves energy efficiency in the domestic, industrial, and commercial sectors was developed and will be finalized within the 2011-2012 financial year. The same applies to the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Unit. It will be set up within this financial year. I think it would be helpful to get from the department what happened to that. You see, what I would like us to shift away from is to keep on presenting things that we're planning to do, At some stage, we need to know if we said we plan to do something last year, and then it comes up again and say we're still planning to do, what happened? Why is it coming up again? I hope I'm accurate, but this is what I picked up, all these areas that I've raised. The same applies to the NERA and ERA Act, because I see here they were within this financial year. And the indication was that we need to, we'll be getting them. Amendment of Petroleum Products Act, amendment of the Gas Act. It's important that we really address the issue of why is the delay? Where is the hold up? What role can you play as Parliament? Over and above, what role is the department playing to ensure that it expedites those? Is it even generally and logistically, let's come to the legislative processing. Once we do not have spread of the bills, we may face up and speculate that the moment they get released by the cabinet, they'll come as an avalanche. It then will impact on our other work, oversight work, international work, facilitation of cooperative government, as well as even facilitation public involvement and participation. And I dare argue, honorable members, that if we are to do our work properly, we cannot at one stage concentrate or overly concentrate on one area of the legislation. I know life doesn't go like that, you know. But it's just a concern I want to express, because I sense, what if now all these bills get processed and then they just come, they go through NEDLAC and they just come, you know, galloping, you know, as I say, in the form of an avalanche. And as we all know, once a bill comes to Parliament, it's given priority. That's the reason why I'm picking up this. I know it has been even been raised even now. Let me just read everything from this report. One other area is the refit program, which all of a sudden changed to rebate. I wouldn't necessarily push the department to respond to that now, because in the second term, we will be getting, or we have allocated time for the department, NASA and others to update us on the first phase of the IPP procurement. But please, believe you me, we are all eager to know what made you shift from refit to rebate. Or just another thing, I've just noted it here. It could fit in the other, but the ease of the 1 million solar water heaters program, as well as INEP, in fact, I would plead the department at some stage, without rushing it, to when reporting that, do it in a GIS format. Why? It's fine to know that you've done, I don't know how much now, but 500,000 or 400,000 of the solar water heaters, but where? It's fine to know that we're about 75% in terms of electrification, but where? And I'm sure the department would be creative enough with the support of ESCOM as well to use GIS technology to splash it over the NEP. This is where we've electrified. Give it different colors. What has been done by municipalities, what has been done by whoever, by the private sector, the non-grid, and all of that. Please, let's help us. I've always been nagged by this thing that I see a figure of 75%, you know, but I don't know where that is, you know. We went to Elfingweni, and there are a couple of villages around there who have electricity. But the one that was supposed to be the beneficiary of that hybrid project isn't. So a little bit of a breakdown is going to help us to pick up those areas, but not obvious to the detail as if we are regional project managers or national project managers. No. Unless the technology can arrange that, you know, when you unpack a website, you can go to a web page, another web page, another web page. But sometimes you just want to have a better overview. I must say that's going to be extremely helpful. Just as a comment, to what extent has this document influenced your planning? I know it's up for consultation. The National Development Plan. Okay, let me go to the APP now. I'm sure the ease of the data collection on the integrated energy plan by CSIR is not new to us. Actually, I was even interested as to know how far is CSIR given that, as I say, this is not new. Flip the other side of the coin. Given the fundamental importance of the integrated energy plan, can you get a mini project plan as to how do you propose to formulate mode, and then at the end of the day we say here is an integrated energy plan. What steps you see a bullet point there, even maybe in the document, I don't know, I must have missed it if it's there, but a mini project plan, that would be helpful. A question I have around decentralized electronic energy data repository and a couple of other related issues. Just bear with me. The data management system, slide 25, it's about under OMB, develop a proper data capturing analysis and report system. Two things I have there. Is this data collection, data management going to be in different platforms? Or is my expectation and assumption of an integrated but centralized data management system the way to go? Just put us at a better platform of understanding there. Number one. Number two, institutionally, what roles would your ISMO, once it's off the ground, and what role would that South Africa play? I know we've raised it some time ago that we're concerned about our data collection, data management. Reference was made on annual publications in the Energy Price Report, Digest, Synopsis, Review, Outlook. To save time, it would be helpful just to get, even if it's over email, just what would be the key content of it? Not in detail, but what issues are going to be contained in those different publications? Quite numerous. And for whom? But sometimes the readership and the level of readership is just as important. You've got journals for professionals, you've got journals for the public. What is that in, you know, what are those publications targeted for? For whom? Reference was made to the fact that increased domestic refinery capacity, the current audit will be out by June. Some time ago, we're told it's going to be out by December. It's going to cost us a safe month. Which is which, June or December? We're going to be quite tight now and about deadlines, particularly if the department commits them to liquid fuel storage. Every time I meet people in this state, particularly black-owned companies, they hit the roof when you talk about storage. And what's the status quo? Is there any cause of them to be so agitated when you talk about storage? I know you talk about you intend improving that, granted, point taken. But I'm just expressing an experience that one picks up when we talk to people, they talk to us, they phone us, they lobby us, that you all know people. The revised LPG retail price, just as a comment, something triggers me there. Once upon a time, the one who's speaking to you, honorable members, was a health activist, and I got entangled in medicine price regulation. We're a nine-piece committee with about five health economies, the way those economists unbundled and exposed how fat is added and added in medicine pricing was mind-boggling. It was just unbelievable how prices are manipulated. As I say, I'm making a comment, and I hope you'll just be as equally alert when revising the LPG retail price. Because already, during Honorable Tabete's era, you did a very brilliant job, and I'm one of the people who experienced it on the ground. I used a gas heater, at home in Jobe, and the prices were skyrocketing, and I just had to buy it because it's cold. And all of a sudden it went down. And when I joined this committee and picked up, no, this is what we've done, we managed to put in regulations, so it has an impact. It did have an impact, but still, it's worth reporting or sharing that experience. Solomon's and Associates report on refineries, that would be very much welcome. We've heard they were spoken about the Petroleum Product Act. It's about one of the reasons why the delay is, because it's long overdue. It was raised, and time and again was raised. The indications are that it will help to relieve quite a lot of things. Ombi, when you spoke of establishment of ISMO, you said it's listed, or it's supposed to be listed. Stock exchange? You could just clarify that. Right at that very slide 19, you say the IPP unit, which has been established, it has been established, so moderate support from external experts. I thought you would just say support from the external experts. Now, once you say moderate, it actually draws attention from us. Was it supposed to be extreme, Meneer Apan? And why moderate? And what kind of expertise did you draw for it? Or did you draw into the unit? We're looking forward to the IRP reviewer. I even wrote here, you know, as a note that one would be keen to say what percentage is ESCOM going to take and what percentage are the IPPs going to take. Because once upon a time I was told it's 70-30, but someone was saying that may change. If you would just settle me on that. The IBT, inclined block tariffs. When I was entangled in the Chawelo saga in Soweto, during the time when those former councillors' houses were burnt, the IBT came up as well. And recently when I had interaction, with ESCOM, once again the challenges on IBT came up. This is a comment, honourable members. I trust and hope that the IBT challenges, or shall we say, unintended consequences of IBT will be effectively addressed in conjunction with ESCOM and SALGA on behalf of municipalities. As a concept, it's brilliant, but in practice, it comes out in another direction. And I'm sure, having introduced IDBT, we can capably refine it, and it becomes a very powerful tool, even practically. On legislation, can I highlight, honourable members, I'm sure you all support me, even those who are not around, that the inclusion of secondary legislation in the legislation program, that is regulation, is paramount. We want to be exposed to it. We know that many a times it's a competence for just the minister, but we want to be exposed to it. I must highlight, with my experience, from trade and industry. It's helpful not just to look at the primary legislation, the bill, and then for the act, but that they look at even the regulations, because you then have a sense as to how is this act going to be implemented through regulation. And I would like it to be recorded very strongly today and henceforth. Once again, as a comment, let me leave it as a comment. The NRWDI gets established and then it doesn't have funding. NNR comes to us early last year, if you remember, complains about lack of funding. And at the same time, we are saying that radioactive waste and related problems around nuclear waste and the like are terrible hazards. Maybe honorable members, as we move down the line, we should really crack our skulls and think seriously, how do we handle that? It may be a general trend on other initiatives as well. Get established and then no funding. But it's even more serious here. Just a comment, honorable members. Because there was a reason to have that established. And when we talk about transition as well, wouldn't NNR be an appropriate platform to handle this during transition? Well, to me, they seem to be close to each other. There's new legislation coming up in the nuclear energy sector. I hope it will be part of the water race that we need to have a good sense when are they going to be done. Community awareness. I remember last year we were even opposed on how it's being done in other countries, I think particularly to France. I trust and hope at some stage we'll get a plan on how that is going to be done, because it is rather unfortunate that what is happening at this stage in time, community awareness is through media. And there's one thing that media even doesn't say much is that its bottom line is profits. They sell information to make money. I don't care who says what, but they sell information to make money. That's why there are even debates about the ombudsman and tribunal and things, because it's a way of trying to, to put some halt in their overzealous behavior in selling information to make money. And unfortunately, that's the awareness that they are getting at the state in time around, nuclear energy. So one is asking that question with some loaded biases too. It's not just how, it's also when. Or maybe, let me not speak as if I'm not aware of the resource constraints in the department. Have you thought of any creative ways of mobilizing resources elsewhere? Because it seems moves are afoot to have nuclear energy getting off the ground, and we're not going to run away from the fact that media will still feast on that, as it is already beginning to get more and more into the pages of the dailies or even weekend papers. I see here there's a talk about energy efficiency standards, regulation and codes of practice. We are planning that in June we'll have about 4 days on energy efficiency, including public hearings, including a visit, including a very, very extensive briefing from the department, from ESCOM, from anyone whom the department could advise could come. I'm sure we'll invite institutions like NBI, National Business Initiative, because they've done a lot. I'm sure we'll agree with the public works for buildings without government will definitely come. But please indicate who else. I'm sure the mining should come as a mining sector. Agriculture should come as organized agriculture so that we know the extent to which they are doing their bit in energy efficiency. But for once, we want to have a very comprehensive and clear overview. And don't forget that you have to answer to us that you promised that the energy efficiency strategy by end of last year, and up to now we're still getting it. As leave us. Of course, it's commendable that you taking up the renewable energy white paper quite seriously in view of exactly that you're rolling out now the renewable energy procurement as well as from the climate change side. We definitely need to be intensively engaged in that, honorable member. There is wind energy awareness campaign. What about solar? Interestingly, on measure and report on energy-related carbon emission reduction, CDM awareness campaign and sector booklet have been circulated. I just have an interesting question there. What role does self carbon play? Does it have any? Because when we met them in August last year, they said very interesting things to us. As a reminder, Self Carbon is one of the subsidiaries of Central Energy Fund, concentrated on these areas. But Magoti, I hope in future, much as we invite us into activities, we should do that in also in terms of other information, because they said, in terms of the CDM awareness campaign, a sector booklet has been circulated. I don't know whether members that have been shared with us. But it could be very helpful that we get such kind of information. Not only us as the committee, but as Parliament. Because climate change issues and your CDM initiatives don't belong to just the Portfolio Committee for Environment and Water Affairs or the Portfolio Committee for Energy. They belong to everyone. Climate change is a global and a national initiative everywhere and anywhere. And just on this area, I hope the preparations for Rio Plus 20 are afoot and very intensive, or getting intensive. Kwame, in terms of the human resource plan, I thought we were going to be quite firm about business, unusual this time. I think one of the things we'd like to hear is the extent to which training of even the few staff members that are there, how far intensive is it? Because sometimes it's helped to have highly trained staff to be able to shoulder the load. I'm not in the department, but I'm just throwing in something. My beloved department, why pilot recruitment of disabled persons? That has been more than two decades, that has been a campaign for a very long time. I'm a bit curious to know the pilot nature. I thought you would say that you are just unrolling it. In terms of the adjudication committee, at some stage you may have to do a focused update on that. That adjudicating committee on behalf of the department is handling billions. The arms deal is nothing as compared to what you people are handling. I'm sure honorable members would be quite keen, not in detail, but just to say how capable are those people, because they're handling a hell of a lot of money. we should be clear and be happy that they are capable of living up to standard and expectation. Down the line, I hope the committee secretary is picking this up and members. I propose and very strongly too that we should have a dedicated session to handle risk management and the like, response and awareness, what has been done, as well as anti-fraud and corruption activities. This is a department that's handling billions. There's nowhere in any society that you handle billions and then you don't have corruption. You must tell us how firm are you on that. The whole government is firm on corruption. So can you hear from the department? So let's have some session to dedicate and hear how far have you been brutal enough, and I mean brutal enough against fraud and corruption. SOE oversight framework, very much welcome, Mamuzungu, very much welcome. Because those are the instruments that help you to deliver. When are we getting that framework? And when are we getting the plan for all the restructuring of the SAF group? We don't want to hear the report. We want to see the plan. We spent a full week in the SAF or doing oversight on SAF. So we had a fair amount, a fair idea. So give us a project plan as to how do you want to go about restructuring, because we don't want just to pick up operational issues. We know PetroSA and Saneti are obviously on their way out there, but we want to get a strategy. What informs you to restructure others? Because even the subsidiaries or the competencies that are left inside SEF are still as vital when it comes to, you know, ensuring security of supply of energy. EDIH, I'm sure we'll all agree that at some stage we'll get a report once the whole thing is closed. This human resource or issue or the dispute is a cause for concern. Is it that difficult not to really negotiate that around? Were there no ways of even redeploying some of those people? Because once again, some of them even approach us. Now it's difficult to even say whether we sympathize or whatever with them, because it's a dispute. But we assume that it's people who have skills which might be needed elsewhere. In terms of international relations, that's very much welcome that the department is coming up with a strategy implementation plan, which is very good, because amongst other things, when Mama Elizabeth presented to us, much as we welcomed it, but we did highlight that there were still other areas that were not shared with us, particularly what the department is doing at international level. The 90 agreements, we also would like to have just synopsis, a summary of those agreements as well. The quarterly reports on international relations are very much welcome. The annual, obviously, are an expectation, but the quarterly reports are very much welcome. We hope that you'll share that with us. With the new advent of budget review process, I'm sure honorable members would be keen that from time to time we invite the audit committee, at least the audit chair or the chair of the audit committee. We need to refine and improve our oversight activities. Mamzung, the last one, new program number 6, mainstreaming and things. Can I make sure that the committee secretary is listening? When we get an update or some details of that, we link that with the Department of Mamutangwana's department is a very long list. You see? Okay, never mind. Women, children, and persons with disabilities, yes. That's the one, because in this very room, we did interact with them, and I think Ukwabe was there, and he was very, very much impressed by the fact that there is room to work together. So when you update us on that program, it could be good to see how you people are working on that. But it's a very commendable initiative. It's very good that our government always looks into those who are vulnerable. I've already spoken about the legislation plan, and we need to have a frequent update on it and very meticulous planning. The skills development, I haven't heard anything around it. I remember when I was still an alternate member, right there in the NSOP section, all the sitters were invited to account. Surely at some stage, Funeka pinned the swale up and see how far have the sitters, and how far is the department ensure that sitters do their job. It's a double-edged sword, you know, because we want to see how far have you made sure that they do their job. But at the same time, together with you, as the department honorable members, we must pull in the sitters and put them in front of us. How far are you people? For renewable energy, for any other things. I mean, we want to roll out a million solar water heaters. Somebody has got to maintain them. Somebody has got to learn that technology. It's in different forms. Just as an example. When the department, or when this committee arranges a joint meeting with the standing committees on appropriations and finance, one thing that's going to be an undoubted expectation from us to you, department, is to prepare for it. You don't want to be embarrassed. Whether those committees and the National Treasurer whichever, will differ, but they must differ on facts. They must differ on facts. So, on top of whatever lot of work you do, you just have that mammoth task. Bring us facts that day. It's not about fighting, it's just about saying that, look, this is what the department is saying to us, and this is what we are witnessing anecdotally. But listen to the facts, and let's see if we can work out a better solution. I think I've already said it, but let me reinforce it. I hope from now onwards we'll share strategic reports in a proactive manner. You know, I had a few here. The energy efficiency strategy, the localization accord. Somewhere I was told about it. I even jumped. I didn't even know there's something like that. There are a few others as well that in his colored as well. So my pieces of paper are not in one place. But I think it's important that we just raise that. Now Mamuzungu will realize why I said, go and eat first. He ain't seen nothing. But people, the main thing is that we're handling a strategic plan, and we've got to go through it as meticulous as possible, so that when we roll out throughout the whole financial year, we know on what basis are we going to be conducting oversight on you, and what would you be expecting to us, from us as well. Over to you now. Thank you. Madam Lord, don't worry, came back in time. We haven't touched your area of wisdom.
Chair, the question on BAC. The department doesn't have very much operational money, so our tenders are very limited. But the IPP, Bid Adjudication Committee, pardon me, the Bid Adjudication
Simple, can you?
My apologies, Chair. Sorry. We don't have very much operational money, so we don't award many tenders. But the one very big one that we do adjudicate is the independent power producing project, which is Billions. But there, Chair, I can confirm categorically the process there is very audited from start to end with international auditors and observers and participants. So every step of the way it's been audited with a proper audit trail before it arrives to the department. When it arrives in the department, when we sit to adjudicate, we are also have observers from National Treasury. And we have the internal audit department will also observe and monitor the process we follow. They report back to the audit committee as well and to the EXCO committee. So, Chair, I can confirm that the members on the committee have been properly trained. We also have a legal representation on the committee for legal compliance. So I think they are all properly trained in that way, Chair. Thank you.
Agita, did I talk so much? Be very careful during the struggle days, you know, particularly in East London. I was to talk for 2 hours. I don't know whether I was trying to compete with Comrade Castro. Look, just concentrate on questions. Like Kuma Mcheti, I didn't expect, you know, a response. You know, if we comment, it doesn't mean that people should come. Should respond to them. It's just you take note of what we've commented. We expect actioning or expect you to be alert to what we've commented, you know, in future. But at least the questions.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I'll deal with a question on skills development and, you know, also respond to the question as to how far are we involved in the, you know, education and training authorities? I'm personally serving on the, you know, on the Cheetah board, as well as, you know, on the board. I mean, on the strategy and governance, and on the energy. You know, and water sector, we also have one chief director who's dealing with you know, ensuring that the energy and water sector, you know, their strategic direction is influenced towards the needs of the department, and that's the same with the Cheetah board. And in as far as training is concerned, Chair.
Oh, sorry, man. You just triggered something, Nguni. Probably then, how many sitters are linked to our work? How many sitters are linked to the energy sector?
To the energy sector, we have two sitters. That is the energy and water services sitter, as well as CHETA. That is the chemical, a CHETA, you know what I mean? But we call it CHETA.
Actually,
yeah, okay. Yeah, it's CHETA. It is the Chemical Industries Education and Training Authority.
So it's three?
No, it's two. It is the Energy and Water Services CHETA, and it is the CHETA. CHETA.
I don't say linked directly in form of presentation, but where there's some interest enough. Let me say there's some interest from energy. For instance, I picked up from Engineering News, I think it was yesterday, that there was a body that was complaining about, you know, poor certificates or false certification of electricians. I don't know which city was that. It was not energy. Oh, never mind. But I'm trying to show you that I'm not asking you where you have direct presentation. No. Just, if you could say, there are about four or five cheetahs, you know, You see now what you have done to me. Where we know that this scheme has got a direct bearing on energy sector. Would you? It doesn't mean you have to crack your skull now, but it should be of interest so that when we invite them, we know whom we should be inviting. Chieta, the water and local government, and the energy sector could be at the forefront, but there could be one or two others whom we could also still invite because they've got skills that relate or have some form of impact to energy sector. Let's leave it at that. I hope you got what I'm trying to articulate. Sorry, Carl. Yeah, governance.
Check. There are four. It's the CHIETA, it's the water and energy, it's the local government sector, and the retail sector. Wholesale and retail.
Okay, let's leave it at that. But you've seen what I'm trying to say, that let's have that homework as we move along, you know. Some are right at the forefront, but some can be sort of more secondary. I know you're still frowning. Let's move. Before...
I'm aware that there is confusion about, you know, the involvement of local government, you know, as CETA.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not participating there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chairperson and honorable members, from where I'm sitting now, I would like to take most of the comments that you made, particularly with regard to performance from the last report that was presented. I would like to take those inputs to the DDG himself so that when you have that session, DDG can then give you a report on what has been done and what's the plan going forward. Because I don't want to misrepresent the branch, because I didn't really have the all the reports before I came here.
Can I respond to the questions that you raised around the following matter, starting with legislation delays? Just to indicate that we are responsible for developing legislation that we present to the executive. In other words, we prepare cabinet memos with proposals around legislation. Once this legislation has been approved by cabinet, there are certain processes that are outside of our control, depending on the nature of the legislation that we prepare. As an example, if legislation has a specific economic interest matter, or is of an economic interest matter in relation to the stakeholders outside of government, being the NEDLAC process, then we're required to take that legislation through the NEDLAC process before it can come to Parliament and so on. And within NEDLAC, we are not in control in terms of the processes there, because basically what happens is that we have to negotiate it through them. There has to be a report at the end of that process, and otherwise we find it difficult to get the state law advisors to certify it. And typically what would happen within the NEDLAC process is that depending obviously on the nature of the issue, we would quickly get to an agreement, or we would get to a disagreement, and both of those options or those possibilities are very well and good. The problem is where there is not an agreement or a disagreement, and this is just a negotiation, like a consultation process, and that could take a very long. So when we say that we want to introduce legislation, you know, in the first quarter or the second quarter, it is on the strength of the information that we have and our estimates of the time that it will take to get it there. But strictly speaking, you know, it's not, you know, that legislation is drafted. You know, so it's not like we don't have the legislation. It's drafted, it's been approved by cabinet, and the rest of the other processes are what we have to go through in order to do that. And that's why in this instance you find that, for example, the National Energy Regulator Amendment Bill and the Electricity Regulation Amendment Act were approved maybe 8 months ago by cabinet, but they're still sitting within the NEDLAC process. So you have those kind of issues. But what we then do is we just push it into the next financial year. That's why you will see it being mentioned on both sides. The issue, I mean, the comment around the GIS for solar water heating and INEFTA is receiving attention. Incidentally, this is not the first time that we've had requests for that. So that's receiving attention. The National Development Plan and how it has influenced our processes, it's both ways. In some instances, we have influenced the National Development Plan. In other instances, it has we have influenced it and it has influenced us. In other instances, there are misalignments. 3 weeks ago, we had a meeting to thresh out those misalignments, and there is comfort that we will get to a particular position.
No, until the policy conference takes place.
Well, that's
then things will be sorted out.
Chair, we can give you a long story about policy coherence, you know, in that space. You know, so it's not just those two levels. There are hundreds of other. And that's why you find that there's a constant process of alignment between the different. It's also a function of which comes first. The policy conference, we're influencing that, and sometimes it also influences us. So, you know, it's a relationship that goes both ways. And then, Chair, you asked a very interesting question about the role that STATS SA plays. We do have a compact with STATS SA regarding the collection of certain data on our behalf, particularly socioeconomic data. But unfortunately, what we're talking about here is specific energy statistics. As an example, we collect, and my colleague here can perhaps elaborate in a little bit more detail, but we do energy balances for the country in order to assess, you know, what is our usage of energy in the country. In other words, what comes in, what goes out, and where is it deployed. But one of the biggest problems that we have is that it's not disaggregated to the extent that it should be. And we gave the example with energy efficiency where, you know, we can't say to you, you know, with confidence that we know exactly how much the public sector, public buildings sector, you know, consumes in terms of electricity, of energy, and to what extent has there been energy efficiency gains. That's the kind of detail that we're looking for. From a modeling perspective in the IEP process, some of the issues, particularly on the liquid fuel side, just as an example, by way of example, in terms of, you know, the data that you want to use around usage, etc., in the non-networked industries, is extremely difficult. So what has happened is that some regulation was published in order to compel users to submit certain data by law. Incidentally, some of the data is of a commercially sensitive nature, so, you know, companies are reluctant to just release that information like that. But by and large, those sectors that are regulated have regulatory filings that they have to comply with, and that can be, you know, dealt with. But where the sectors are not necessarily regulated, where we have, like, if you like, the market environment, then it's near impossible to get that data as easily as that. And in South Africa, we have a very interesting, you know, mix of, you know, regulation in some instances and deregulation, or shall we say, market. And it poses its own challenges. The listing of ISMO share is not listing on the stock exchange. It's called listing in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. So the process that you follow to get to Schedule 2A or 3A or whatever under the PFMA is called listing, and it requires that there must be a business plan. In other words, National Treasury requires enough information for them to understand what the budget implications are, what the risk profile is of this entity and so on, because if you think about it, it has implications for the national balance sheet. Chief, the reference to moderate support from experts relating to the IPP unit is that we're saying that we don't want to be 100% dependent on consultants around this issue. So when we say moderate, it's a mix between the department having its own financial, legal, technical experts, you know, and that's how we build the capacity and we create South African expertise, and only use, in exceptional cases, outside consultants. At the moment, what we have is that because this is, you know, a new territory, this is the first project finance arrangements in the energy space in this country, not even Eskom has done this, is that we're finding that we are using a lot of external, very expensive consultants. We have done this elsewhere in the world. So it's what moderate refers to, where we bring the expertise in-house and don't rely on it completely. What is the ESCOM split in the IRP, Chair? There is a process around that. And the first aspect of the process, which will be completed around May this year, would be to map out the long-term tariff trajectory, because that indicates how much revenue is available. Because depending on whether it's ESCOM or the private sector, is a function of what happens to the ESCOM balance sheet as they build more and more. Right? So it gets to a point where ESCOM cannot raise any more funding to implement the program. And at that point, you want to look elsewhere, because then ESCOM's credit rating, you know, deteriorates to such a point that nobody will lend to it. But over and above that, it's also a consideration around risk, because what we have is one entity. So if there's a problem with ESCOM, we believe that it is so risky that, you know, we will not be able to recover from such a situation where ESCOM, you know, hits a more serious problem than 2008. So that's the first part. And then after that, we'll be able to, you know, having determined what can be put on the ESCOM balance sheet, find additional leveraging from those outside of the ESCOM. We hope to complete this process by around July this year, and then it will be clearer what the tariff will do in the first instance, and then secondly, what the IPP program looks like as well. We had an agreement let's start from the policy. The policy requires that we must have the ability to deal with radioactive waste, as it were. At the moment, as indicated, it is done, it's managed by the licensees, it's managed by the operators, and we also indicated that it is not an ideal situation. So legislation was introduced to deal with that problem, irrespective. So it is a requirement, and the fact that Treasury does not have the money at this point is, you know, is a bit unfortunate, but that's the reality. So what we had then done was to agree with Treasury that we would rather focus on everything else, and then towards the end of this financial year, we would, you know, fast track the listing of the National Radioactive Waste Development Institute in a manner that allows for Treasury to fund it early next year. What the risks are around this is the fact that we still have the functions being done by the operators, but this has been the case for the past, so many years. So for the past 25-30 years this has been the case, so it's not like it's a big risk as such. It's just not ideal. So before we introduce, I think that's the condition, before we introduce the nuclear power program, this Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute needs to be operational, and that's how we got to some, you know, agreement with Treasury around that. Chair, you are correct. The question was, what about the solar awareness campaign? And I think I did allude to it, that the wind segment is more advanced than everybody else, and they tend to be more organized as well, so to speak. But I think we're also benefiting from this because we are also eager to localize the wind value chain. There has been some indication that with this awareness campaign, we would be able to get the necessary localization. The solar, biomass, and others will definitely follow. Safe Carbon has registered a few projects under the CDM mechanism, under the clean development mechanism, but they are still confined to the projects that they are doing themselves. In other words, they're not registering other people's projects or trading the carbon from other people's projects. And I think it's something that is unfolding, that they might get to a point where they start playing in that space of carbon trading more and more. I think my colleague has touched on the adjudication role of the department in the renewable energy program. Not just the adjudication, but the evaluation. Chair, there is a manual, and I think the CFO pointed out we don't do tenders in the department to that extent. We run a trillion rand program, more than a trillion rand program remotely. We don't do it directly. Others who will do the procurement, even for the all our capital programs are the same. We transfer money to municipalities and to ESCOM, and the procurement happens there. It does not happen within the department. Our operating budget is about 200 million rand, or 400 million rand, of which so much of it is for salaries. So there are no tenders involved as such. But we're very keen also, Chair, to give you some reassurances around how we deal with the renewable energy adjudication process that indicated is heavily audited. The certain liability with the evaluation panel, and it only comes to the department at a certain point, and even then the BAC follows a particular discipline for them to get to its final recommendation to the Director General.
But you are supposed to monitor those adjudication processes very closely.
No, Chair, we put systems in place, right? So there is a framework as to what processes must be followed. Those processes are audited independently, not by ourselves, because we are an affected party, because we ultimately have to say, here is the evaluation report, and therefore BAC, we think we can stand behind the evaluation for the Director General to endorse. So we have a specific, you know, a role that we play there, which is a systematic one. It's not, we don't derive comfort from the fact that we are providing the oversight. We get comfort from the fact that there are systems, and those systems are auditable, and one can then pick up if there are problems from the audit of those. It's a detail that will clarify all of that, Chair, with proposal. Yeah, I think that's all of the questions that I have.
Your turn at long last.
Thanks, Jay. Jay, I'm going to make a couple of general points, but it will assist with the presentation going forward, and I'll answer some of the questions the Honourable Member asked earlier on, so it will help understand as I go, as I present. But when the department split from DME, and I want to go a bit slower here so everyone is with us, when we split, we got 30% of the budget. That 30% seem to have formed the baseline for us going forward. At some stage, National Treasury needs to unpack and address the core of the problem. DMR took 70% of the budget. With the budget, they took most of the staff, hence leaving the Department of Energy with minimum staff, minimum skilled staff, would leave us with a huge gap of competence and skills and a huge gap in terms of funding. The funding that we receive for the department, 95% of that budget goes to transfers to state-owned enterprises and projects. Of that, 5%, which is just under $400 million, is for the operational costs of the department. And from that $400 million, bulk is for compensation of employees. Then we got huge operational costs as well. And just to understand the challenges that came with that 30% of budget and the aftermath of that split is going to linger on for quite a while until National Treasury addresses this core problem of the department. And it does affect the delivery of the mandate of the Department of Energy and the oversight role the department plays for the transfers. Of the 95% of the budget that's transferred to the entities, I'll give you an example, the INEP program. Much of this money is transferred for the work that they do, but they don't get any money for operational costs, but they are supposed to provide an oversight role. And Treasury will tell you that we need to do it within the baseline that we have, and that's next to impossible. But we still try and assist where possible. The Honourable Member asked earlier on, is these budgets temporary or not? It's an indicative budget for the next three financial years, and it is the reality on the ground as of now. But we have three opportunities in which this budget can change. One is in July, Treasury will request from us if there's any motivation for unforeseen and unavoidable expenses. But that is very strictly controlled, so it's not always granted, but we do use it. The second one is an adjustment budget, and where we request for anything above what we need for the year. Last year, if I give an example, it was the $21 million that we received for rental for our office accommodation. The last one is for the new budget going into the following year. Treasury will request from us any above baseline request, meaning the budget that you see now that they indicate, do you perhaps have any other needs that you want us to cater for, which we do. Last year, in November, we submitted for the new budget. We asked for $3.7 billion more. We only got back $1.2 billion. And of that $1.2 billion, $1 billion went to EEDSM. You'll see it's going to ESCOM. So we do use every opportunity, but regardless of what you try, that base budget is not right. That 30% baseline needs to change. And I think we've had many opportunities with Treasury where we've tried to address this issue. All the figures that you see that we present are actual figures. So as much as you might find the local organizing committee for the World Cup, you're going to see it for another year if possible or for the rest of the year that I present, purely because we've got to balance back to our actual figures and we use slides that we can always make sure we're speaking from the same sheet. Always.
Chairperson, but just there, because then when you come and present on your variance, that influences your variance. That's my point. Question is, why should the 2010 have any relevance in your budget? Because the thing that's passed, why should it always? Because the impression that you would want to give us is that you have not been allocated sufficient funds in that area. But whereas something is inflating the figure, which is not practical, and that's the local, that's the World Cup.
Chair, I take the point, but you're going to get the same instance coming up next year when we have the Transit Petroleum Pipeline, where I have to leave it there and show you that this year it's come to an end now. But I do take the point, Chair, and I will note it when I comment, though, if I can help that way. Chair, in terms of the questions that were asked, I will just answer some of them because it will affect the presentation. $106 million for goods and services in the 2011-2012 budget, and $84 million was in the E&E document. Okay. And now there's a principle that I want to raise. As what all the figures that you see in the E&E document, and the E&E means estimated national expenditure, when we get all those figures put in, when those budgets are allocated to the department, when it comes to the department, we need certain functions to happen. We are entitled internally to shift the funds to survive. So it's as much as Treasury would say you have the 84 million, over and above that we had 21 million for the leases. That's how you got the 106 million. So 84 million was in your E&E document. We asked for another 21 million, gave us 106. But in terms of a principle, when we submit the figures to E&E, it is an estimate at that stage and the budget at that stage. But when it comes to the department, which I've got now 6.8 billion for the new year, under the line item goods and services, I'm entitled within the department with the line function to reallocate those funds as the department needs them so we could survive. That is a reality, that we shift the funds so that we can survive. That's all I can say. That's how it does work. But the trail of shifting funds between programs is restricted. I've got an 8% limit internally, and there is a proper audit trail if I shift between programs, if I shift between categories, because it's subject to the audit. Chair, you picked up another issue on the Radio Waste Disposable Institute. It is legislation. We are supposed to abide by it, but there is no funding to ensure the compliance. And this is the case in many instances in the department. So, Chair, I think the Honourable Member asked me earlier on in terms of the decreases in lots of and the increases. It's purely to cater for the activities on the ground as of now. Is when we move money. And I think the one question on AG, I think we should welcome that if the fees have decreased, because we get to use the funding elsewhere. Okay. Chair, I think I've covered most of them. If I haven't, I will also respond in writing if I have left out things. To today's presentation. The first one is an overview per program. It's giving the MTF allocation. MTF meaning the medium term expenditure framework. It's for the 2012-13 financial year, would start on the 1st of April, 2013-14, 2014-15. These are the indicative budgets as of now, and as I've mentioned, we have three opportunities in which some of these figures could change. And we're hoping they will change for the next financial year and this financial year as well. Between 2011 and 12, the budget has increased by is now 6.8 billion for the new financial year. That's starting on 1 April, and it's increased by 9.7%. The budget between 2012 and 13, there's a 416 million increase, leaving it at 6.1%, mainly in energy policy and planning. And the last comparison between 2013-14 and 2014-15, there is an increase of 9.6%, mainly in energy regulation and INEP. But Chair, I will go by program and explain each one separately. This is purely a highlight for the next three financial years.
So in other words, as you move along, from the next financial year, 6.8, then the following it goes down to 6.4, and then it goes up again to 7. Okay, carry on.
Thank you, Chair. Program 1, which covers the Ministry, the DG's office, corporate services, the CFO's branch, the COO, and internal audit. Compensation of employees, the overall program 1 has an 8% decrease. goods and service as a 20% decrease. This was internally adjusted by shifting of funds between 2011 and 12 and 2012 and 13. It was purely for us to cater for expenses which we didn't have enough money. So we moved money internally. So it's just not, don't read it literally to say the budget has moved negatively. Payments of capital assets, 36% decrease. This is mainly due to the relocation of the office, which was meant to take place in this financial year, but didn't take place as planned. And that money, we're hoping that the Department of Public Works will give us the bill of quantities, so we would be able to transfer some of that money to them before the financial year ends. And that's all on Program 1, Chair. Program 2, Energy Policy and Planning. There's a very slight movement between the adjusted budget and the allocation for the next financial year, but the biggest movement is in goods and services. The major reduction will be in travel and subsistence, and the transfer to the Transnet Petroleum Pipeline. This will be the last financial year, that's 2012-2013 financial year, where we will receive the $1.5 billion. So in total, we would have paid off to the Transnet Pipeline $4.5 billion. Program 3, Energy Regulation. The program had an overall 145% increase. There was a slight increase in compensation of employees, but covers mainly the increases and very little of the vacancies. Transfer payments increased substantially by 161%. This is due to the EEDSM Eskom project, which has increased from 118 million to 1 billion in 2012-13. You will also see it further down in the last slide when we highlight the transfers. Goods and services, there was a 10% increase, and this was for consultants and travel and expenses, but this is needed in the department given the vacancy rate. Program 4 is the National Electrification Program. The program had an overall 4% decrease in the budget. Transfer payments decreased by 4%. As we spoke earlier on, the reduction is due to the $281 million for the local organizing committee, but it's once off, it's now done, it's finished. Goods and services, it's a 36% decrease. This cost item has reduced significantly. It's due to travel and expenses that had to come down to cater for other expenses as well. However, this travel and expenses, if it's decreased, it does affect INEP and their monitoring and oversight function that they do perform. And this is what I was mentioning earlier on, Chair, that we don't have money for oversight functions, but there's substantial movement in transfers. Program 5, Nuclear Energy and Regulation. The program had an overall 7% decrease. Transfer payments went down significantly by 77%. Funding to NEXA has been reduced by 5%. Funding to NNR reduced by 13%. And then goods and services, it was reduced by 6%. The department was allocated $8.5 million as a rollover for international membership fees. That is why you see the variance in goods and services, because it had some of the rollover from the previous financial year. The next slide here is under...
Can you repeat goods and services?
That's Program 5. The department was allocated $8.5 million as a rollover for international membership fees, which was included in the budget of the $12 million. 2011-12 as $12.9 million. This financial year, we have a 2.9. I'm saying included in the 12 was a rollover from the previous financial year. So I'm just trying to explain the difference between the two. You'd see a huge variance, but I need you to take into account that there was a rollover. Chair, I need to pause a bit on this one. on the transfers. I think I've mentioned the first one, Transnet Pipeline. It's the last year in 2012-13. EEDSM municipalities, yes, there has been a decrease of 80 million rand. And here, National Treasury has increased the budget to Eskom for EEDSM. Chair, my understanding from Treasury, and I think the DDG Electricity can comment, the results they get out of the municipalities in this area is not as what they expected. And the reports they get is not what they're expecting. So they feel that money is, and the systems that Eskom has for this program is better, it's better suited for Eskom to receive that money and monitor it. REFSO, well, there's nothing to say on REFSO there. SANEDI, there's been a substantial increase of 149%. This additional funding was given to SANEDI so that they could operate independently from the SEF group. So it's for operational, all those costs that they have received their money. The next big one that I'd like to speak on is INEP Non-Grid. I think this has some history with it, that it does move quite slowly in some instances, but between the last financial year and the previous, I think 2011-12 did move a little better. NNR did receive last year an extra 21 million, but we have noted that they do need extra funding for the nuclear power board, and they're also part of the Kruberg and project, which they also play a role. And NNR have indicated their additional funding needs. A meeting, I think it's next week, that has been set aside for NNR so that we can address the issues with National Treasury. Nexus has had a 5% decrease. It's affected by the energy efficiency saving instituted by National Treasury. And also Nexus volunteered a 100 million saving on their own. Chair, as much as the SOEs, the state-owned enterprises, do have some decrease in funding, each is a state-owned enterprise. We deal with them separately with their specific funding issues, and we have meetings with Treasury where they are present as well. I think that's all I've got on this chair. Thank you.
Remember?
Yeah, maybe it will apply to other areas. Just energy policy and training. Invent learner and teacher support material. What do you do with this? I assume you might want to enlighten me a bit, because my pedestrian approach would be it belongs to the Department of Education.
Sorry, Chair, can I just ask clarity? Can you
pass? Let me stop.
If it's learnership for the department, it's department funding. It's not. It's for the training and education within the department. Is that what we're speaking about?
I don't know. It's for me. It just caught my eye that you have an item called. Now I've lost it again. Inventory, it says learner and teacher support material. That was 138,000. That was budgeted, that was given to you last year. But for this year, you have nothing.
Okay, I'll double-check this one and I'll respond. I don't have the information in front of me yet. Sorry, Chair, I don't have the document in front of me now. Yeah, I can respond to it in writing, Chair, because I'll look at it.
Yeah, for interest sake, it was page 10 under goods and services. Yeah, and then the on page 8 of that document, yeah, page 8, it, there is an amount on inventory medicine. I don't know. I mean, whether Mazungu, they line up in your office and you give them a shot every month. I have no idea. But there's this medicine that it's administered. You can't see. Okay, I'll have to come to you and then show you the pages first. You found it? No, page 8.
Page 8
under goods and services, you go to, it's under goods and services, then you have to, what is that? Under inventory, there's entertainment. If you go down, after housing, inventory, learner support, materials, medical supplies, and then inventory medicine.
43,000?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what it is? Okay.
The question then finished. Yeah, that's invent. Okay, catering. I've made my point that, you know, it goes both ways. If we are requiring to cut, then Parliament must do the same, because here we are talking about 1.6 million rand and it's being cut to 677, which also influences your statement here that you have been underfunded. So I'm saying what happens to you should happen to us. With the nice goodies there. So I'm just saying, for me, I'm not sympathetic to you when it comes to this. You know, I think I've made my point. Let me not dwell on it. Training and development, I would assume, is empowerment of employees. And it has been cut substantially. I don't know what impact it's going to have on the department. Just on payment for capital assets, I'm still on program one. Payment for capital assets, you have got a cut of from 7.8, you are sitting with at 5 million, and it's machinery and equipment. If you could just enlighten us, what type of equipment were you intending to buy? And then energy and policy, I assume it's under Mr. Apai. Yeah. So we'll be seeing you more of you. So you can't ever complain that your travel and subsistence has been cut. It has been cut for Mazungu possibly, but for Ombi it's fine. He can still come regularly to Parliament because his amount has been increased from 3.9 million to 4.3. So Chairperson, that's a man we can see quite often. His budget is quite sufficient for this type of travel. No, yeah, they're just making. Program. Yeah, if you could, yeah, on machinery and equipment, if you could just enlighten us. I think that should be all from my side. Just Chairperson. I think, yeah, if electricity demand side management grant, I missed your explanation. I think you gave an explanation earlier. Maybe it was quite fast for me, but I've had to give you an explanation. The reasons for the cut from 280 million to 200 million. I think, Chairperson, that should be all. Yeah, and venues and facilities. I mean, this is a significant cut, but I'm an outsider. I'm not an insider. What venues do you secure? Is it when you go for community outreach program to pay for those type of things? I'm not sure. I just wanted to establish that. Yeah, Chairperson, I think that's all from my side.
Can I respond, Chair?
And that Lucas, let's not get everything. So just my own clarity. I'm. Let's take page 9, where there is this transit pipelines, you've got 1.5 billion. And then on the 2013 is 1.5 billion again. Is this actual, or it is just to sort of balance the books, or how is this worked out? Because if, I'm a bit concerned.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see on page 8 here, housing, the 29 and 10. I don't know whether it's 3 million. What is it about? This one. Is it, I don't know, housing, it says housing. I just wanted to know what house it is. Thank you.
To save time, let me touch in as well. You say there was a rollover from 2010-2011 on affiliation fees. Are we up to date now? Because participation in international bodies, particularly at this stage in time, nowadays, is quite vital. And I'm sure you can understand geopolitics. Geopolitical dynamics can be used or abused to just get us out of an international body because they haven't paid fees. Just that is still okay. Are we on track? Page 9. Maybe we're fast, Machete. If I look there at the EEDSM for municipalities and ESCOM, there's a very interesting movement. EEDSM allocation for municipalities goes down by 29%, and for ESCOM, shoots up 742%. Those are facts and figures. Now Mama Zungu can come in on here and others. Is that a reflection of what changes in strategy, that emphasis will be on ESCOM more than municipalities now? What does this signify? What does this tell us? I know it's facts and figures, as I say. The INEP non-grid. One would expect INEP municipalities, once again it goes up very slowly, and INEP ESCOM goes up by a larger amount. Yes, I do concede ESCOM is a formidable entity. It has its footprint, it has its capacity, it has its legacy, it has its everything. But one would expect and assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that municipalities would always have a big chunk because they are growing. I mean, you talk of 285 municipalities. 285 municipalities. So one would really assume that there's improvement. Some were in the ICU in the olden days, out of the ICU, so they can have a grab. Of course, there are 100 plus those who are licensed by NERC, so that I understand. But even then, that's quite an amount. I'm deliberately putting this there provocatively so that we can get to know what does this reflect, if my assumptions or expectations are skewed. What are expectations and assumptions that the growth in allocations to municipalities should get bigger and bigger these days, because municipalities are growing? If they are not, then let's get that clear. The last one is the non-grid. Here it comes again. We've expressed concerns in the past, hoping that things will improve, but it seems, instead of improving, allocation for non-grid even goes down. When even introducing renewable big time, and once again, cautious, but expressing my assumption that when you get renewable, your solars and wind energy, which can nicely get tucked into non-grid, you know, rolling out, then allocation there should be improving, but it goes down. What does that signify? Sometimes those figures are very helpful. Pie graphs and bar graphs, they reflect a certain trend. I hope you understand. That's what I would like to know. Thank you.
Can I respond, maybe starting with the last one, the off-grid program? As you rightfully point out, it's very misleading. The off-grid program is not decreasing, it's actually increasing. What you have in the 11-12 number there, that 127, includes a rollover of 57 million rand. Right, so this was taken from the previous cycle. So if you reduce that 55, it's actually a 70-something that has increased to 86. So there's actually an increase. But because it's relative only to the previous year, you don't see that. So that's the first thing. It's actually increasing rather than decreasing. And then regarding the IMAP numbers, what we're finding is that more and more the municipal allocation has caught up with the ESCOM allocation. When we started, municipalities used to get about 30% of the allocation and ESCOM would get 70%. At the moment, it's like a almost like a 50-50 split between municipalities and ESCOM. It's not exactly 50-50, but it is. And it's mainly because of two arguments. The first one is that most of the electrification backlogs are located in two areas. It's in the informal areas within the municipalities. Outside of that, it's rural. So ESCOM is finding itself having to electrify more and more of the rural backlog. The 20% that is left tends to be a lot more difficult cost-wise because it's in a rural area. And then for municipalities, it's the informal settlements that largely absorb the bulk of that, of the funding. And then the tricky one, Chair, is the EEDSM. And your question is actually relevant, but it's a little bit misleading. There are two sides to it. The first one is that the EEDSM allocation has been increased substantially from 380 million to 1.2 billion rand. That's like globally. But I think we reported the last time that EEDSM has not been successful on the municipal side. There are a number of issues around it, but maybe one of the hidden reasons that we're not being told, you know, in the face is the fact that municipalities derive their revenues from electricity sales. So it is contradictory to have a successful EEDSM program. So that's the first aspect, is that we've increased the allocation because we believe that the EEDSM needs to ramp up. But secondly is that it has those implications for municipalities. But thirdly, Chair, to also indicate that even regarding the allocation to ESCOM, it is a conditional grant. So in other words, ESCOM enters into a contract with the Department of Energy, and the department indicates where they must apply those interventions. So irrespective that it is electrification on the ESCOM side or EEDSM on the ESCOM side, it is still the same residential areas. So it's not like the municipality, no, it's not like ESCOM has its own municipalities. ESCOM does not have its own municipalities. They still implement those programs within municipalities, right? So it's just that the implementation agent is ESCOM, it's not the municipality itself, but the beneficiary is still the municipality, if you can look at it that way. And in the context,
would that be correct if I say, ideally, my emphasis, ideally, municipality should be the one that far exceeds ESCOM? Okay. 100% right, Chair. In fact, about 4 years ago, there was a move to remove ESCOM from its schedule 4B question in the Constitution, that ESCOM
have a license in a municipal area that is questionable. Right? There's been some legal opinions as to whether that is constitutionally sound, because the constitution is clear that it's a municipal role. But because of the legacy, there's been acceptance that ESCOM does the function on behalf of, so ESCOM is a service authority on behalf of the, sorry, not a service authority, is a service provider on behalf of the service authority, which is the municipality. And that's why, you know, the last year on the EETSM program, in fact, not last year, the last year and the year before, actually, it was a bit embarrassing because the EETSM program did not perform as well for those reasons. And we believe that with ESCOM being the implementation agent, but obviously, you know, with municipal involvement, that we will be able to can at least spend that money. Yeah, I think those are the three questions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try and answer the others. I'll answer the easy one first. The housing of 3 million rand, ma'am, it comes from the 9-10 financial year, part of the ex-DME. So I don't know the answer, but I can find out for you. You do know what?
We are normally required to give guarantees to our employees that do not qualify, you know, for housing. I mean, for housing loans, that amount is meant for that.
Thank you. And then the question on the Transnet pipeline, it is the actual amount that's transferred to Transnet. It's 4.5 billion over 3 years, starting from the last financial year. This one that closes on 31 March 12, and the next one closes on 31 March 2013, is the last tranche that will go out, and then it comes to an end. And then, Chair, membership fees are not up to date. We've actually deferred one of them to the new financial year, informing the body, the international body, that we will pay them the new financial year. But we've made an undertaking to the branch within the department. Before we close the financial year, 1 week before that, if there's any funds left over, we will transfer it to this international body and we'll pay the balance over in the new financial year. So there won't be any funds left over when we close this financial year. Then, Chair, to answer the questions by the Honourable Molotro, medicine, I'm going to, 43,000, I'm going to see what it is, but I think it's something within the department, some stock, and I think the corporate services DDG was going to answer on that one.
Yeah, it is in line with you know, with our employee health and wellness framework, where we provide, you know, those that are affected by supplements. Yes, and we keep them in the department. Yes. You know, to avert things like, you know, flu, you know, attacks and all that, which really take a lot of, you know, man hours because of them being at home, you know. But if they take these supplements, you know, they can, you know, their immune system, yes. Yeah.
Chair, the other question on the equipment, machinery and equipment, the 5 billion that's there, 5 million, that's under machinery and equipment, we don't have to keep it just in that category. If I want to use it under furniture and equipment or software, I can use it. I can use it. And much of that money, in fact, most of it, is kept for the relocation. And then, Chair, there were other questions that certain amounts went up. I'm going to use travel as an example. Yes, Mr. Apani might have more travel money, but when things are a bit sorry in the other places, we do go into his budget and via the environment, we take that money. And quite often, I think the minister, the DG, and the DM as well, and some DDGs, are requested to travel under short notice, trips that are not planned, so we do have to use up all the money. Venues and facilities, I'm glad you feel sorry for us, but that's the reality in many of the items that you would find a decrease, purely because we found a better use in a more in a priority area. And even though you see it in a line item, when the financial year opens, I can very well take it out because we need it in a place that we didn't plan to use money. So it disappears when you look at it. But bottom line, I have to come back to the budget that they gave me. Noche, that was my statement earlier on when I said I won't take out the LOC money because we always got to balance back. But, Chair, that is the reality that the budget, the way you see it now, and the line items you see money allocated to, is not the position that we would finish off at year-end. Because internally, we might have to shift funds, do vironments via National Treasury, reclassify funds to survive until we have an opportunity to ask for more money, and that's also not a guarantee, which has been the case in the past. Thank you, Chair.
Could be interesting as to what comes out of the three experiences, as I call them experiences. The July period of unforeseen expenditure, the adjustments in September, October, and the regular budgeting exercise. Now, I think, you know, whilst we have taken into account very seriously that that Demlodo is saying that we should be quite alert, not to be overly sympathetic, but also we need in our minds to be clear as to exactly where is the problem, honourable members? You know, where is it? You know, if there are three stages where National Treasury can be able to monitor, or three platforms, if one can see, over and above the Auditor General and others, where they can monitor, you know, the extent to which you face challenges, pressures, and things. Of course, it's quite interesting as well that, I'm not an accountant or a financial expert. When you see in a department a lot of vironments, I wonder how do they react to that? You keep on, I won't use the term disappear, but you keep on shifting money from one, you know, cost driver to another one. You know, it's very striking. Because I think as an accountant, I would get very uneasy. As Auditor General, I would get very uneasy. Probably that's one of the reasons why last year you had these running battles. Because you remember the Auditor General, they came, and when you came, you hit back and refuted quite a lot of those areas. I don't say it is, but maybe when we meet, that's one of the things which we need to raise. That to what extent will this be allowed to be a regular practice where you keep on shifting money from one non-essential to another essential service? Maybe waiting until the non-essential service becomes an essential service. Can we conclude by saying, number one, this was the first, okay, but look at, this was the first round. We definitely have to have another round. We've gone through these things very, very, very meticulously. We need to get them, you know, back into a sort of a consolidated understanding as well. Okay, well, look at
basically, as I see the problem, it's really the division of the 70-30. If you do not get that right, you have this problem continue.
Well, department, that's why I'm saying you get the facts right before we go and see the two standing committees. Even if it means postponing a set date, although we wouldn't like that, but you have to get your facts because we don't want to get embarrassed when in front of them. It's not anyway, and it's going to be an adversarial, you know, encounter. We just have to go and put our facts on the ground and say, look, is there anything that can be done to address what we see as a perpetuating anomaly? I mean, you can't have a perpetuating anomaly. At some stage, it has to come to a halt. Not that other departments are not important, but what if the one that has to ensure that the supply of energy is unable to ensure that, or is doing it partially? And what happens? I mean, how many wars have been won, have been waged because of energy? How many social political and social upheavals do we find throughout the world due to shortage of energy? I think on the basis of that, we need to be clear as to what significance we allocate to any entity that deals with energy. And it should be on that basis that we then allocate resources to it. I'm not saying even money, just resources to it. Could be any form. Honorable members, I really would like you to skip over this non-grid thing. Omi has indicated, okay, there's been an increase, but even that one is very small. I suppose when we handle it at some level, Omi, we should say, what exactly is hindrances? What issues should be put on the table to make sure that that grows as well? Because remember, for a change, we've got also on the other side another strategic tool, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. That's a tool that obviously would need this area. I hope I'm correct, because I trust that non-grid is very much in the rural. So, Comrade Kukile's department would very much need this area to be appropriately resourced. I'm not saying a billion, but something, let's think about it, and see what we need to do to creatively ensure that as we move along, this grows, Because even, once again, if one goes back to that Elukwini, project, they were at a stage whereby they invited, the consortium, they invited honorable members, Agricultural Research Council, because they wanted to also pull in the economic component. So it was not just about introducing electricity, but it was ensuring that there has to be an economic dimension, because energy was available now. So I would like us to look at it from that angle as well. Mzungu, you may have concluded your new program number 6, but the extent to which you have concluded it without talking about rural energy. I know I'm an obstructor now, but I feel at some stage you need to coin rural energy. Not semantical, but to what extent are we addressing that? Not now. Sorry, I should have raised it in the past, but it just came into my mind. I knew that. To what extent are we happy as South Africa, as the South African government, as the state, as South Africans, that we really are on board, are on top of things, or at least are getting there in articulating or addressing rural energy, which has a lot to do with non-grid environment, which has a lot to do with being in the hinterland, far from access, but a lot to gain, even if they would get 15 kilowatt hours, or even 30 for that matter, from zero. Honourable members, I trust and hope to close that. I'm sure now, as we may be, we've had a fair taste of how we should actually be handling these three strategic tools. I trust and hope we've had a firm base as a launching pad for the next financial year, going right down the year, doing our budget review process, conducting our oversight, engaging with the public, doing our legislation and others, with a better understanding of what the department is presenting to us in terms of the strategic plan. Let me thank the department for all the effort they've done. Let me also indicate that as even the plan indicates, on Thursday we'll be handling free basic electricity and free basic alternative electricity, as well as the electrical power interruptions. Particularly the free basic electricity, I must say, it's a build build-up on our side towards the pricing policy. It's a build-up on our side towards ensuring that we do make a contribution to the MIPD as well. Thank you very much. Thank you.